This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
This thing is pretty accurate.
No, I know it is.
So,
I know it is.
You blew like a 0.24.
I don't know what that means.
What's legal limit's 0.08.
Okay.
You drink often?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to insult you. I'm just trying to understand why.
No, I'm seeing a counselor. I'm seeing a counselor about it, so.
Watch for me to throw some people out.
Okay, no more games, right?
My juice?
Can I try again? That there is wine.
I thought that was from yesterday.
Did you drink it up here yesterday?
Well, I bought it from home. I'm
going to have Spencer come in the back way. She's lied and lied, and Mr. Olin found a cup that had wine residue in it.
All right, everybody. Welcome, pod people. You were just listening to Kimberly Coates, and we'll get into her story shortly here. But you have Ben, and so hello. I am doing well. I hope you all are as well. And you also have Steve. Steve, how is it going today?
It's going well. A little tired, but I'm feeling good.
Same. A little tired, but feeling good. Not feeling quite as good as Kimberly Coates appears to have felt prior to the first day of school. I'm not sure if you guys have heard anything about her, right? This story's kind of like all over TikTok and Snapchat news and been very out there. It's a little bit sad. I feel it's a little depressing, a little bit sad. I don't know how you feel about it, Steve. I'm sure coming from a teacher standpoint, you probably have some sympathy for this woman.
I have mixed emotions.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as an educator, you probably also are like, that's extremely irresponsible to be... Anyways, before I go into that kind of stuff, we should probably tell the people the story, right? So, if you haven't heard about it, Kimberly Coates is a 53-year-old woman from Oklahoma. She is a third-grade teacher. And on the first day of school, she showed up intoxicated. It looks like it was pretty, like she was there for quite a bit before anyone figured this out, because she actually took a picture with some of her colleagues and she's smiling like ear to ear. But ultimately, they realize she's intoxicated and she is taken to be interrogated at.
I think they were in the principal's office.
Oh, okay.
They were not back obviously.
Okay, yeah, that's the principal and school and maybe possibly. Don't you have on-site cops now?
Yeah, you call it an SRO, a school resource officer.
Yeah, I wonder if that's who it was, because they do have an officer who gives her a breathalyzer. She I don't know if she's playing dumb or if she acts like she doesn't know how to do the breathalyzer. He tells her what she blows. She acts like she doesn't know what that means. Long story short, though, she's over twice the legal limit at a 0.24. She says that she did not... Initially, she says she didn't drink that day. She was drinking the night before. Ultimately, they say that's not really possible like for her to blow that high if it was the night before. And they get to the point where they actually put a cup on her desk or the desk in front of her and ask her what it is. She says, oh, that's my juice. I brought it from home. Like, the officer sniffs it. He's like, ma'am, you want to try again? This is wine, right? So that's actually all in the clip we just played.
It's there for a couple decades.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, your juice could turn to wine, but it had to have been sitting in your desk drawer for quite some time. But that's it. That's all in the clip that we just played. But that clip's a little bit hard to hear, so hopefully you guys can get something out of it. You at least see she's very adamantly denying it, and the cop says, you know, she's been lying the whole time. However, I assume at this point, well, I mean, yeah, she just blew, right? So she's also still intoxicated, number one. Number two, she does finally admit, not in our clip, but from what I've read, she does finally admit that she drank the night before and on the way to school. So this person is, living it up. She does also admit, though, however, that she does have a drinking problem, or that she says she drinks often when the officer asks her. And she also says that she is in treatment for that problem. Steve, you can kind of say it from an educator standpoint. I think most jobs, like, if you ask for help, you can get help, but you can't actively still be drinking in school, right? Like, that's not part of the help. You would have to take a leave of absence and get help, I would assume.
Yeah. I've witnessed it happen twice like this in my career, and the first time I didn't actually see it go down. Like, this is all, you know, what I was told, but the chair of my department, the person, you know, in charge of all the English teachers for the high school, suddenly she was just gone. And so I got it through the grapevine that she'd apparently come to school intoxicated and had been caught doing that and had then said, I have a problem, I need help. And so then she went into rehab. Now, again, I was told that this had happened on multiple occasions and that even other teachers had covered for her in the past and, like, taken her out to the car out the back door, driven her home, you know, gotten subs to cover for her, you know, that were in the building. And so, but she was then gone for 6-7 months of the school year, and there was a long-term sub in place. And then she came back toward the end of the school year, and that lasted a few weeks before she was gone again.
Yeah.
And the rumor was that she had relapsed, or that, you know, she'd never really solved her problem, and that there was a mutual parting of the ways. Now, the principal in the video kind of says what, you know, a lot of times what happens when a teacher, you know, makes a, you know, if there's a behavior issue there that they've got to deal with, the principal offers her, or you know, the teacher asks, am I going to get fired?
Right. He offers her to resign, right?
Either that or resign, yeah. Because, you know, it's easier for the school district if she just resigns. Because then they're not firing her. They don't have to worry about unemployment. But it's also better for her, because then if she wants to seek another job, getting fired as a teacher is pretty much a death sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll never be fired again. If that's on your record, if getting fired or having your contract not renewed is on your record, that's officially on your record, no other district is going to touch you.
Yeah. Because
they're going to just assume you're tainted, you're damaged goods.
Yeah, from a legal standpoint, does it work the same as other companies where, like, if they called, though, and asked why she was not kept, they would have to not give those details?
Right. I think that, yeah, there's disclosure what they are and aren't allowed to disclose. And just like other companies, you know that information does get passed. But a lot of times school districts won't even list. They don't care what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
You get fired or you get non-renewed. Your contract is not renewed because most of the time when you get hired in at a school, you get what's called a one-year contract. So you're there for that school year under contract. At the end of the year, your contract's done. And so they have to renew your contract to bring you back for the next year. And if they non-renew you, if they decide not to renew your contract, then that can have a devastating... It's just not getting fired, it's just not getting, you know, held over. And that can have a devastating consequence, because a lot of times when you apply for a teaching job, that's one of the first things they ask you is, have you ever been non-renewed?
Mm.
And, you know, so resigning, that doesn't have the black stigma.
Right.
Resigning happens for all kinds of reasons, and so then you're still marketable.
Right. Unfortunately for this person, she's all over TikTok.
Oh, she's never going to teach.
Yeah. This is bad. Like, she can resign, and it's still over. And she's going to also have a record from this, right? So that would be details that the other schools could find, because it says she's going to be charged with public intoxication. I'm surprised that it's just public intoxication. I don't know how far the school year got in, but these are third graders, and if she... Well, they found this cup in her classroom, right? So if she's actually with the students, I could even see, like, child endangerment? I don't know. Maybe that's drastic, but you're a stranger, like, virtually, you're not a relative, and you're drunk with these kids, like, over twice the legal limit?
I would think, from a legal standpoint, that the charge would be public intoxication.
Yeah, that's what they got. That's what they put. And it was the resource officer. I hadn't glanced too well at the detail on it. So, but yeah, they said that she will most likely be charged. She's expected to be charged with public intoxication.
Right, and I think that's about it. I don't know, because it says in the video, first day of school. Now, does that mean first day with students, or does that mean first day where, like, teachers are setting up their classroom?
And right, yeah.
Meetings and department meetings and all that stuff. I don't know, because I don't see the kids. But I thought she did mention something like, please don't walk me by the kids, or where kids will see me in handcuffs. Something to that effect. Does that sound familiar?
I didn't see that, but that sounds like something she would say, because she also said, please don't call my husband. But I don't know. I mean, I get this woman super drunk, but I don't know how she thinks she's going to hide this from her husband, right? He's probably going to see the TikTok, right? I don't know if her husband watches TikTok, but it's going to be all over the news. And beyond that, like, what are you going to do? Just go home and be like, you know what I just really decided to do today, honey? Quit my job. Just all of a sudden was like, I know it's the first day of school, but I was like, that's enough.
I just realized I can't handle the little bastards anymore.
The little bastards, right. Like, I was going to ask you that. I mean, I know, like, this is the thing. There's a lot of reason to have empathy. One, this person clearly has a drinking problem, right? She admits she has a drink problem. She's in treatment for the problem. However, she's going to a location with children, so, and it's her job, right? You shouldn't be going to any job drunk. Unless you've got some sort of deal with your boss and you happen to be a bartender type thing, right? Like, where you guys sell alcohol and he's like, you can have four, right? Like, whatever the deal is. But this is not that job. Beyond that, though, teaching itself, and you can attest to this as a teacher, I would hear how you feel about it. I mean, she's teaching third graders. I know you're teaching high school, but there's different levels of stress in the different grades. There's different things you would deal with. But teaching as a whole has been actually ranked in the top 10 most stressful jobs in the country. So, as a teacher, I'm sure you could empathize with that.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's a stressful job. And, you know, I think about whatever ranking system they use to rate teachers as being like a top 10. Most likely that's self-reporting stress. And teachers are dramatic. You know,
especially the drama teacher.
Yeah, it's a tough job. It is. It's you know, it's facing the public, you are, you know, you're basically in customer service where the customer will, where you don't have a product that they can see or oftentimes understand. And so, you know, you're facing a lot of backlash from, you know, the community sometimes, from parents, from, you know, administrators and the district itself, from other teachers. It can be a very stressful position. I've had some really dark years. I'm fortunate to be in a wonderful situation now where my colleagues and my bosses and even the community members I deal with are very, very supportive, and we're all on the same team and the same page. But it can be an extraordinarily difficult job, but there are, you know, just as stressful, if not more stressful jobs out there, being a firefighter, a policeman, an EMT, you know, a nurse, a ER doctor, nurse, these things. Being a social worker has got to be.
I said it wrong, but stress is what leads to it. So I'm glad that you were able to go into some of the stress that is involved with that. And I feel like at a third grade level too, they're even doing more of those like testing and stuff on the kids to see if they're hitting targets and things, which would definitely be stressful. But what I meant to say was teaching was ranked in the top 10 professions that drink the most, with lawyers and, like, yeah, you were just saying, social workers, healthcare workers, and that would be because of the stress. But this person's not an isolated person. And I saw an interview with someone else who was empathizing with her, and this woman had won Teacher of the Year, and then she ended up quitting her school because she went to work drunk. It was the same kind of scenario. She quit because she got caught drunk, and she was Teacher of the Year.
Yeah, I saw that. That was in Kentucky. The woman who won Teacher of the Year in Kentucky was commenting on this drunk woman.
Right.
To be clear.
Right.
And, yeah, and I mean, that's the other thing. You know, we're teachers are dramatic, but we're also very empathetic. And, you know, I look at that woman, she's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you already alluded to it, but, dear God, don't tell my husband.
Right.
That sounded like beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not a healthy marriage. Something deep and possibly dark is happening at home for that woman.
Right.
And then on top of that, you know, one of the reasons why teaching is so stressful too is the hours. You know, everybody says, oh, you only work 9 months a year. First of all, that's not true, because you're constantly working in the summer. You're taking classes to get you know, extra master's classes to get your master's, to go beyond your master's to increase your pay. You're taking, you constantly have to do professional development to for the district to maintain your teaching license and your credentialing. You are, and then during the school year, quite often you're pulling 14, 15-hour days, you know, on a regular basis to get everything that you need done. Because, you know, you spend 8 hours a day teaching. Well, when do you plan and grade, right? Mm. When do you, and you, you know, get like 45 minutes built into your day, that's your plan. But really, you know, a lot of teachers use that as their break, because they've been up teaching, dealing with students 8 hours straight. You know, I mean, they've been working in, and so, you know, it's common to work through lunch. It's common to work through that planning period. It's common to stay after till it's dark outside. Drive by a school during a school year.
Yeah, there's people there. There's cars there. Lights on.
You'll see parking cars in the parking lot. Guaranteed.
Yeah, I mean, from coaching, right? Like, there, when I've gone to schools after hours, there are definitely teachers still in classrooms.
Yeah. And they're not screwing around. And they're not, most of them aren't drinking.
right. I would assume, too, I don't know, like you said, you have planning periods, but during the summer, you probably sort of start to build part of your curriculum for the year as well, correct? Or is that done during the planning periods?
No, you absolutely do. During the planning periods, you've got to make your adjustments. And so you try to build up your resources that you can draw from during the summer, and so you've got your lesson plans, you've got your unit plan, you have your calendar laid out, you have your slideshows that you make, you've got your, you know, all of the worksheets that you need, your tests written up, you work on making those. But then during the year, changes happen. You discover that the students that you have are not, they're not getting the information the way you wanted them to, the way you planned on them to. So you've got to make adjustments. Maybe the students you have are lower functioning than you realized, and you really have to adjust your material down. Or maybe you need to adjust up. Maybe, you know, like, they're meeting the challenges faster and better than you thought they would, and so you've got to adjust upward, and you've got to start challenging them more and adding. And so, you know, it's never just this packet of, you know, calendar, you know, stuff where it's like, okay, we do this sheet today, and this is Wednesday sheet. And, you know, if you do that, you're probably not that effective of a teacher. So you need to be adjusting on the fly.
Right. Yeah. So a couple questions that come up in this story for me. One, before I say that, I want to talk about, you kind of mentioned a little bit about how she was the fear of her husband finding out. That's a little bit weird, like you said. But also, I feel like, unless you're like out with your friends and he went to sleep, like, your husband also, I get it, it's your responsibility, but should be like, baby, I know it's the first day of school, but you are not going, right? Like, you are a wreck. However, he might have been asleep, so I can't just blame him outright, but...
Yeah, and my guess is she started, you know, in the car, you know? She wasn't mixing up cocktails, you know, at the table. It's an early morning gig, you know, teaching. And so she probably, you know, pop a bottle of wine, poured it into her styrofoam cup, you know, travel cup, and put it in the car and started drinking on the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where she is, you know, mid-morning probably.
Yeah, she just had a hot girl summer she wasn't ready to let go of.
I guess not.
Damn. But then the question I have, though, which I don't know if you saw anything on, I didn't see anything on, like, how does she end up in the principal's office? I know she was in the picture with, like, five of her colleagues or whatever, and, like, she's smiling ear to ear. It's like, she probably reeked of alcohol. But I didn't see anything that said how she got caught.
Somebody said something. Somebody saw something. She stumbled. She smelled. She did something to get on the radar.
Yeah.
Of the principal's. Now, the other incident that I, you know, I don't want to mention names because, you know, these are...
Right, right.
But the other incident, you know, was... you know, a teacher who it had been whispered that there was maybe something else in her cup. Now, I didn't hear these whispers until we got to the end, like when she was caught, you know. But apparently there had been some rumblings and some whispering. There had been some pictures that students were taking of her sleeping at her desk.
God.
And I know that there was definitely issues at home. You know, I think the age was very similar between this teacher I know and the teacher from the video, from children out the house. And that's a really difficult time for a lot of married couples when you have children and they leave to go to college.
Yeah, the emptiness.
I remember my parents told me that when my brother and I left, when I left for college, you know, my brother's older, that was the hardest time for their marriage, trying to reconnect without the children around.
Right. I mean, being parents together is part of their identity.
Yeah. And so there was something going on at school that day. There was like an assembly of some kind or something, so all the kids were like in the cafeteria. And so this teacher had run out to Kroger, which is very close to the school. Well, two guidance counselors had to go out there to get some stuff for the assembly as well. So it was just like sort of random. and they saw her coming out of the small liquor store that's attached to Kroger. And then they witnessed her pouring something from there.
I was going to say, if she just goes to the liquor store, maybe she's getting something for later, afterward.
Right.
The pouring's bad.
Right. So after she came back in, they, like, the counselors, you know, said something to the principals. The principals called her in. They had a meeting, and it was, you know, not good. Now, in her case, you know, they talked about, because you're, the first thing you're that happens usually is you get kind of suspended with pay. You're just sent home indefinitely. You know, that's the term, but like they get a long-term sub, and then they investigate the matter, they figure out what they're going to do, and then, you know, we have a union, and the, you know, there's a contract that the union negotiates with the school district, and so how you handle dismissals is a very, like, specific process with a lot of steps. So the I think there was some offers made that, hey, I think you need help. We would like to help you get that help, and then we can discuss a return, so, you know, once the help is gotten. And I think this particular teacher said, fuck you, I don't need any help.
Wow.
Quit.
Yeah, because, I mean, the unions are really good. Like in most companies, but especially in schools, I feel like. Like, where if you ask for help, if you take the help they're offering you. This person, even this woman, had she not come to school drunk and gotten caught, if she had come immediately to the principal and said, I have a problem, I need help, she would still have a job.
Yes, I believe so. There was an earnest, you know, desire to get that help, too. You know, you have to go and reach out for the help and get it and prove that you are, you know, maintaining. And as long as it doesn't come back into the school, that's the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if she relapses on her own, as long as she's coming to school straight and doing her job, then it should be fine. But no, I mean, I'm obviously a big pro union person. You know, I'm in one, and I think they're incredibly helpful because, you know, the administration or, you know, the management in a company that, you know, employs union workers, they can't just decide a spur of the moment, you know, the fate of employees. The contract is there to make sure that employees get a fair shake and that they have support.
Right.
And so you can't, you know, insult the boss's wife and, you know, fuck you, you're gone.
Yeah, and by the time you guys have tenure, I would assume that at least at some point this woman was a decent teacher, right? So it's not even in management's best interest to just dismiss you if they could theoretically get you help and have you become the teacher that you were.
Right. And let me dispel some notions about tenure real quick. There's this notion that, like, tenure means that you can never, ever lose your job, and that's just not true. Now, I in my school district, it's not called tenure. It's called a continuing contract. What that means is that, remember earlier I said that, you know, when you begin your teaching career, you get a one-year contract, and you have to have it renewed every year. And the at the end of the year, the school district could decide to non-renew you for no reason at all. They can just say, you're just not coming back. And they don't have to say, because since now you're not on contract, they don't have to say anything to the union. The only thing that tenure or continuing contracts do is that if they want to get rid of you, they have to go through the union because your contract does not run out anymore. And so this woman, if she's tenured or not, this is an offense that, if she chooses, if there's no, you know, if the union and the administration don't come to an agreement on supports for her or for, you know, help for her or a road back, this is still a fireable offense.
Right.
And so, tenure or no, she can still be thrown, you know, thrown out. Now, it is Oklahoma, and so I don't know what their union situation is in Oklahoma, because Oklahoma is, their education system is really fucked up. Their teachers get some of the lowest pay in the United States. They're ranked in like the 47 out of 50 states, and their current state superintendent is a jackass. The statements that he makes on a regular basis are so incredibly ignorant and ridiculous. He makes, you know, well, I won't go further, but he is not pro public education, and that's really unfortunate for a state superintendent.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's all added stress for teachers there, with the low pays and not having the support that they need. That's bad. Let's flip the coin. I think you've showed a lot of empathy. So you had said in the beginning you were kind of mixed emotion on it. From a responsibility standpoint, like, what are kind of the negative thoughts you have in this? I mean, obviously, being by the kids, I think, would be the worst of it.
Yeah, fuck her. I mean, look, I get it. You know, I'll put all the sympathy out there in the world that she's got maybe a rough marriage, that she's going through some difficult times in her life. But she's a grown woman. She's, you know, 50-plus years old.
Right.
And I'm very protective of my profession. You know, I feel like public education comes under fire a lot on the local level, on the state level, on the national level. You know, I feel like we're always fighting fight, whether it's, you know, parent groups who are trying to ban books, or whether it is fighting for the legitimacy of the union that we believe in and that helps us, or whether it's, you know, fighting with the community on a tax levy because the school needs funding and the community thinks it's greedy. Like, you know, I live in the state of Ohio, and in the state of Ohio, we're constantly voting for tax levies for the school district, and it comes up every 5 years. It's a regular thing that the school needs operating money, and they have to go and ask the community for it. And the community is now looking into this and saying, I have to vote to spend more money in my taxes. This is ridiculous. Now, different states have different funding models where they determine what the state school, you know, the schools throughout the state need and divvy it up, and so then they set taxes that way. But we're always fighting for respect. And so it pisses me off when a teacher takes the professional responsibility that we have, which is, in my estimation, incredibly high, and pisses on it. You know, nothing drives me more insane than seeing a news story where a teacher has had an illicit sexual experience with a
student. Yeah, I think when you're talking about, like, held to, like, this higher accountability, especially, like, what you're saying, which is, like, from an ethical standpoint, right? Like, you guys are mentors, right? You have to be role models. And so when it comes to things like the criminal acts, right, it's like there's zero place for that, and it definitely would put a toll on – it would put a bad reflection on the profession as a whole.
It does, and then it creates an opportunity for people to criticize public education even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, look at these drunk, you know, these drunk teachers that don't care.
Right. Why would we give them funding?
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, it drives me insane. And, you know, she chose herself over her students, which is, that's a sin in teaching.
Right. And she really did, because this is the thing. This isn't somebody who doesn't know they have a problem just shows up there. She admits, unless she's lying, because she lied about a lot of stuff, but she admits to the officer and the principal that she is already getting treatment for this. So she knows she has an issue. So I'm not sure how you go from, I know I have an issue and I'm trying to get help for it, to going to school after a night of drinking and then continuing to drink on my way there is reasonable. Like, I don't know how that happens.
And, you know, she's self-medicating something. Some trauma, some pain that she's feeling. And that's where my sympathy is.
Right.
I understand that. This isn't... And it's not like this is some 23-year-old party girl.
No. I mean, this person definitely has lived a life long enough to know better, right?
Right. Who, you know, those young teachers who haven't grown up and haven't, you know, entered into the adult world yet somehow. They're just trash. That's just trash. You know, you're just like, okay, well, but there's something like, well, you know, hopefully someday you redeem yourself and you grow up and you figure this out. This woman has probably raised children who've left their home or left her home. And if not, she's had the time to do it. Because, I mean, again, I think she's, you know, conservatively in her 50s.
Yeah, she's 53.
Okay, 53. This is a woman who's closer to retirement than she is to starting a job.
Yeah, I was wondering, I mean, she would obviously lose some of the money, but she probably could quit and get a decent amount of her retirement, and that would be probably the route, right?
So, if she started teaching, let's say when she was 23, because you can start teaching right after you get your bachelor's degree, you know, 22, 23, she's got 30 years experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't start teaching until later. I was 30 when I started teaching, but regardless, she's got, now, I don't know what the retirement age or what the requirements are in Oklahoma and what would benefit, you know, but she's got to be, you know, looking down the barrel of retirement at least. Like, she's got to be, you know, closer to it depending on what she wanted. So I don't, and that may be something that is negotiated in this, you know, because I think a lot of this will come down to a union negotiation, because again, that's another great benefit to being in a union is, you know, the union can give you legal representation to help you negotiate the best outcome of any situation for you and for everyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But so for her to make this mistake at this point in her life, first of all, it's been happening. This isn't the first day she woke up and went, you know what? It's 9:00. I'm bringing in the Merlot. You know, this is something that's probably been ongoing. And I mean, this is speculation now, but my guess would be that teachers have smelled it on her before.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure this wasn't the first time.
What's that?
I'm sure this wasn't the first time. Yeah, it doesn't seem like you just first day of school pop in and do that, right? Like, for the first time ever.
Right. 30 years in, you're just like, you know what? It's breaking out the grapes. That's just a guess. But no, my guess is that somebody reported her because she was over the... Now you said that she blew a .24?
Yes.
I didn't see the readout. I heard them say over twice the legal limit.
Yeah.
Now the limit is usually 0.08. So twice the legal limit would be 0.16.
Yeah, yeah.
0.24 is triple the legal limit.
Yeah, maybe I heard wrong. I thought it was .2.
.2 something.
You may have, but like, you know, I know what it feels like to be twice the legal limit, and that is not... You're not in total control. I mean, it's not a blackout, but you are definitely struggling to make basic decisions.
Yeah.
So if she was at a point...
Well, and in all honesty, that she just blew in that video, and when you watch it, she answers the questions well enough where it's like, if she's as drunk as they're saying she is, and I believe she is, I wouldn't be responding as well as she is. What I'm saying is, she's clearly someone who drinks so much that she can handle it a little bit, right? Which is a problem.
That is the other thing, is when you do have a problem like that, it takes more and more and more alcohol to get you to whatever, you know, state you're trying to get to, the goal. And so, yeah. But she comes off as a petulant little child.
right.
during the interview there, like, no, I don't want to. Like, when he's trying to handcuff her, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And answering the questions, she's very, like, short and, like, and childish. Now, I will say elementary school teachers tend to have a very specific voice and demeanor because they're used to having to talk to kids all day. And so it's, well, hello, children. You know, it's very, and so that just may be a symptom of what, you know, who she is now, since she's probably been teaching for longer, for over half her life. But,
right.
you know, it was just like, oh, God, this, you sound so stupid and unprofessional, and it just, it made me cringe. It really made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it did. And, like, you know, you can feel sorry to her to an extent, but then there's an extent where it's just like, she's old enough to know better. She's seeking treatment. She should know better, right? She should, I don't know what her relationship with her husband is. He should help her to know better. The therapist she's seeing should help her to know better. It's just, there's a whole lot of, it seems like someone should have stopped this before it happened. But it is what it is. That said, Steve, I want to take you on a really left turn, bro.
Ooh.
And it's a really left turn, but we got to do it because it's still, it's not super left. It's still schools. You're still a teacher. I want to get your reaction to this. How do you feel about racism?
I'm firmly against it.
I'm firmly against it as well. The reason I asked is because in the main article I was utilizing for the Kimberly Coates story, a headline was there, and I just clicked on it because, like, I can't leave it alone. So this Florida school, well, let me read the headline now. Florida school officials apologize for separating black students at assembly. Principal placed on leave. And this happened last Friday. This article was published on August 22nd, and the Friday prior to that would be last Friday. So what happened was the black students in this elementary school in Florida, which I have the name of the elementary school, Bunnell Elementary School, were separated by Principal Donnell Evanson because they were getting low scores on standardized tests, and he tried to bribe them with gift cards to get their test scores up. At which point, parents threw a fit, and he was put on a leave, and he is currently on leave because this happened last Friday. And the district, school district head said that it was a horrible, horrible mistake, and they, or a horrible, horrific mistake that should not have happened. Adding that the school's principal has been placed on paid administrative leave pending an investigation. And I'm sure it works the same way in schools, because in the companies I've worked for, anytime something says pending an investigation, that means we're compiling all our paperwork until we let you go, usually, right? Like, I'm not sure if this person can come back for that, from that. But, yeah, so how do you feel about this story?
Well, all right, let me see if I can understand this. But first of all, let me say that, like, all the things that I said about the Oklahoma school system, you go ahead and put that on Florida and probably double it. Florida is a shit show when it comes to their public education. They're hiring teachers who are not, who don't have teaching degrees because of the teacher shortage they have there. They pay half of what a lot of comparable states pay. I have had quite a few colleagues who came from Florida because that was, you know, Florida was recruiting a lot through colleges, through teacher colleges, trying to get teachers to come down to their state. And so I know a lot of people who moved to Florida, you know, for teaching jobs, and then got the fuck out of there because it was just a mess. But now, this specific thing, all right, so every state has state testing that they do at specific intervals. For instance, you know, in Ohio, in high school, 10th grade, they do the what they call ELA, English Language Arts State Test. And that's every sophomore, every 10th grader in the entire state takes it and gets scored and gets compared. And the school gets a report and gets graded on it. Now, every school gets a report card. The district itself gets a report card, and then each individual school in the district gets its own report card, based not solely on these test scores, but these test scores have influence on it. And so a lot of the initiatives that you see schools trying are in an attempt to get their report card, their state report card, their, you know, up, because that's what parents see, that helps with funding, that helps with everything. To give you an example, the school I teach in, to improve their report card, this was before COVID, right before COVID, they saw it improve their report card based on attendance. If they could get their attendance numbers up by like half a percentage point, they would up to the next level in attendance, which would bump everything up a little bit. So they rolled out this initiative that if you got perfect attendance, you could exempt out of all of your exams. So no final exams in any class if you had perfect attendance.
It's a good deal.
And so it sounds nice, but then kids were coming to school sick all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Kids were freaking out about, like, having to go to the dentist, you know, because a lot of times, you remember, I don't know if you remember this as a kid, like, you know, my parents would take me out, like, you know, once every 6 months to go, you know, I would have my dentist day where I'd get taken out of school to go do that. Well, that would count against you. But, so it sounds like this school, this Florida school, Donnell Williams, is that his name?
Mrs. Evanson was the teacher that pulled them.
She's the teacher that separated the kids?
Yeah, and then the superintendent, LaShakia Moore, is the one that comments on it. I actually want to read her statement real quick. So she said, in speaking with Mrs. Evanson, it's clear there was no malice intended in planning this student outreach. However, sometimes when you try to think outside the box, you forget why the box is there. While the desire to help this particular subgroup of students is to be commended, how it was done does not meet the expectations we desire among Flagler schools. She continued and said, the district wants parents and guardians to actively participate in their children's educational successes, and without informing the parents of the assembly or plans to raise the scores, parents were not properly engaged. She said, from this point forward, all of our schools will engage our parents no matter what group or subgroup their children may be in our continued efforts to raise achievement among all students. So not only did they separate these children and then offer to bribe them to get these scores up, the parents didn't know was the major issue.
Yeah. So, no, this was the teacher's decision.
Yeah, I was saying the superintendent didn't know either, right? Like, the teacher did it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's such a bad thing. And no, she probably did it. She probably did it because she got test scores back and the black kids in her class performed significantly lower than the white kids in her class. And so she was trying to figure out what to do about that. But that's just such a bad look. And right. it's so simple-minded that you have to treat these kids differently.
Right. And it's also taking the responsibility off of the educational system. Because to me, saying, I'm going to give you this gift card so that you can try to increase your score, is saying that I'm doing enough to actually educate you to where you should have a better score. You're just not trying to do it. So I'm going to bribe you. Right? My point is, a gift card shouldn't make your score better. Finding out where the deficit is and then helping the student to improve in that area is how you improve the score.
Yeah. I mean, bribery, trust me, bribery is used. I mean, the bribing kids for perfect attendance to get out of their final exam, that's bribery.
Yeah, but bribing for attendance is easy. Telling a kid do better on this math test when you're bad at math, and I'll give you this money, isn't so easy.
Right. And that needs to be a district-wide initiative to understand why they as a district are failing minorities. You know, that's what needs to be done. And then that's, there are, with it, you know, at the district headquarters, you know, you have your superintendent, but you also have other people there, like the curriculum director, you know, who can look into this and say, this is what the data is showing. Now, what's the problem?
Right.
Are the minority kids coming from more impoverished areas? Because poverty is a huge factor in educational performance. Do we need an outreach program to families first so that they're more engaged in the educational outcomes? Because, you know, like, my kids brought home, you know, they bring home an agenda, you know, like a calendar, like a day planner.
Yeah.
And every day we've got to sign it, we've got to write in there what they read that day and how many minutes they read. You know, we got to keep up with the apps where all the announcements are sent. And you might have parents who are really struggling just to make ends meet, and they don't have time to, they don't have the same amount of time to invest in their children's everyday education. And so they, you know, because some parents, again, especially when, you know, talking about undereducated or impoverished parents, they think school is where the learning happens, and you send them there and they do their thing and they come home and they're smarter when they get home. They don't see it as an interactive process where you're engaging with them, that they're coming home and they're sharing with you what they have, and then you're working with it. You have home activities that you're doing, not just like homework, but like activities that are reinforcing the ideas. And so this is when we talk about like generational wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about minority groups being behind in certain ways, this is how it gets done, is when you have households that are financially stable, that have more time, they can invest in their children's education more, not with money, but with time and with attention. And so then those children perform better. And so then they perform better and they get into better colleges and they're more prepared for it and they have more success. And then they carry it to their next generation, and so on. So when you have minority groups, when you have family members who, you know, your parents never went to college, well, they don't have a roadmap to get you to it. And so the schools need to reach out to the parents at home. They need to get them engaged in what they're doing. But, you know, I can commend that teacher for at least trying something.
But for caring. But the gift card ain't gonna do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she thought she was gonna be like Sharon Stone and that Michelle Pfeiffer.
The Dangerous Minds or whatever.
Yeah. I'm a teach these kids. Maybe we'll study by rapping.
I mean, you'd have a better chance getting them to learn through rap than by giving her a gift card and be like, "Now get that score up, little Billy." That doesn't even make sense to me.
I mean, you know, hopefully that wasn't the only thing that she was doing. She was giving them,
that was like, the start.
That was what they could attain, and then she was giving them different resources.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, I'll give you this gift card if you do better on the test, and then you got to meet with me like after school, and we'll go over a certain thing, that type of thing, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
There's a path, not just the card.
Right. Hopefully that was it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, optics matter. The way things look matter. Doesn't matter what her intentions were. You know, if the wrong people get angry about it, and if it just looks bad, that can derail everything. I remember years ago, there was an uproar. You know the store Montgomery Ward's?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was H&M, maybe, I don't know, the department store, and they came out with a catalog, and, you know, in their catalog, you know, you've got all kinds of stuff in there, all different, you know, kitchenware and everything. And they have, like, clothing. And in the children's section, there's some sweatshirts. And one of the models is a young black boy wearing a sweatshirt. And the sweatshirt has a monkey on it, and it says, monkeying around. Now, the people that made the catalog, the photographers, I'm 99.9% sure that none of the people involved were thinking, yeah, let's put this really, really dumb racial statement in the Montgomery Ward's catalog. That'll show them.
Right.
I don't think that it was, I'm very certain it wasn't done on purpose, but it was an outrage, it was caused by it, because it looked bad. Because it looked bad. And so, people have to be mindful. What is this going to look like? If I'm trying to educate all my kids, and in doing so, I have to separate them by the color of their skin physically, I need to rethink what I'm doing, because no matter what my intentions are, that's going to look really fucked up.
Right. And the interim superintendent, LaShakia Moore, is African-American, but I don't know what the race is of the teacher. Either way, it's inappropriate, but, like, if Mrs. Evans happens to be white, then it just looks really, really bad. So, yeah, I don't know. But, like, yeah, it was just a bad judgment. But I think, it, like you said, it probably wasn't. And like the superintendent, LaShakia Moore, said, there was no malintent. It was just a really, really horrifically bad decision.
And by the way, did you say interim superintendent?
Yes.
That tells me something about the school district. And I might be reaching here, but I don't think I am. You know, in underperforming school districts and school districts with a high percentage of poverty, you end up with a faster turnover of your staff and superintendent included, like all the way up the chain.
Yeah.
And so having an interim superintendent tells me that someone left the job
abruptly. Yeah. Right, or else you would have hired someone prior to them leaving.
Right, and it also tells me that it's a district that is having to make personnel decisions on a regular basis and are worried about making the right one or the wrong one. You know, I've been in my current school district for 9 years. I have gone through 3 superintendents, and there was only once it was an interim. And, no, 4 superintendents, and there was one interim, and it was because the superintendent that was there got a job offer that was essentially a promotion going from a school district to, like, doing some work for, like, Southwest Ohio education, you know, so it's a bigger area, and so he was essentially promoted into a position. Now, again, so we did have an interim, and so that may be the case here, but
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, and, like, you're probably, that seems highly possible. I know, like, for my program that I was in for the PhD, right, with the counseling stuff, like, I had an interim director there, and it's because everybody quit abruptly, right, so he got it all thrust upon him. It was kind of like an abrupt shift of leadership, right? So I could see that being a similar situation here. Cheryl Massaro, the Flagler County School Board Chair. Like, see, this is where it's bad, right? Like, she actually made the statement that the Flagler School Board does not support segregation. Because that's what it looks like, right? So that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. But it is what it is. So, sorry, pod people, to take us on a really drastic left turn there. I just thought that story was interesting as well. And it's very recent, right?
What's that?
Support public education. Support your local teachers.
Amen.
That's
right. Like, kids it's for the kids, right? Like, are all teachers perfect? Absolutely not. But if the schools get the funding they need, the schools will be able to make sure that they hire the best possible people and keep them trained to the level that you want your children to be trained at, right? So, or to be educated at. So the only way to make things better, if you don't think things are perfect, is to fund, right? You can't say, I'm not going to fund because it's not perfect, because then it's never going to get better. So,
right.
All right, pod people. So that was our Kimberly Coates story, and also the Florida school that did segregation without even really knowing it, I think. But yeah, it's just an interesting story there. But thank you for joining us. And right, so Steve, being an educator himself, I'm glad he was here to give us insight. And yeah, it's always a pleasure speaking with him as well. So thank you, Steve, for doing this story with me.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
And pod people, you can find us as always on ThroughTheAbyssPodcast.com and Facebook, Through the Abyss Podcast, all of the podcast platforms. And as Steve has said multiple times, please like, follow, leave messages. Tell us we suck even, right? Like, we've now received a few hate mails. You know, nothing horrible. Steve's not allowed to breathe anymore, and I've been told that I'm a spaz. But you know what? I'm just happy people are listening, so thank you, pod people. And that said, you guys have a great day.
And keep it real.